This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. A little bit later in the hour, we'll talk with Richard Preston and talk about his new book, Panic in Level 4. But first, remember that old commercial for E.F. Hutton, where when E.F. Hutton talks, people listen? Well, the same thing could be said for my guest. When Ray Kurzweil makes a prediction about how life expectancy will increase faster than we age because of advances in genomics and nanotechnology, or how solar power is approaching the point where it will be able to compete with now cheaper fossil fuels, lots of folks listen. And that's because time and again, Ray Kurzweil has been right on the mark. And when he talks about how, not too far in the future, we humans will be better, smarter, and faster with the help of computers that will eventually merge with the machines we've made, people pay attention, even if his ideas sound more like science fiction than science. Well, Ray Kurzweil joins us now, fresh off his appearance at last week's World Science Festival here in New York, to talk about his view of the future and why we need to break out of the habit of linear thinking. He is an inventor, futurist, and author of The Singularity is Near, When Humans Transcend Biology. He's also the CEO of Kurzweil Technologies outside of Boston, and he joins us from WBUR in Boston. Welcome back to Science Friday.
Great to be with you, Ira, again, at least virtually.
How come you're right so many times?
Well, it turns out some things are actually quite predictable, despite the vagaries of history. If you look at the price performance of computing, for example, it forms a smooth doubly exponential curve going back to the 1890 census, which is surprising given how much apparently unexpected history we had in the 20th century. Mm-hmm. But we see other phenomena in science that's where you can get predictable results when every element in a complex system is unpredictable, like thermodynamics predicts mm-hmm. the properties of a gas, even though each particle follows a random walk. And technology development, particularly if you can measure the underlying information content of a process, follows these very smooth, predictable progressions like mm-hmm. genetic sequencing or brain data, all of these things, telecommunications, bits moved around on the internet. You plot them over many years, and they're very predictable, and they're exponential, as you pointed out.
Do you have a prediction that's ripe for coming true soon?
Do I have a prediction for the future?
Yeah, for the future that's about ready to come out that you had predicted a short time ago. That we'll see the fruits
well,
of.
I have one that's just come true. I wrote in the 1980s in my first book that blind people would be able to take a tiny device weighing a few ounces out of their pocket and read all the print as they go through the world. Because we had just introduced a machine that was the size of a washing machine that could do that, the reading machine for the blind. And we did, a couple of months ago, introduce this reading machine in a 4-ounce cell phone that can read in 7 languages and translate from one language to another.
You did?
Yeah.
You have that with you?
No, I don't. I didn't bring it with me.
So you can open up the cell phone and it will translate, it will read and translate into 7 languages.
Right. You can read a French document, have it come out in English or in French. There's about 1,000 guys and gals going around now reading signs on the wall, bank ATM displays, menus, handouts at meetings with the cell phone, which works as a cell phone or a web browser. It's also a GPS system, all with voice output for the blind or dyslexic. Hmm. Displays on the screen for dyslexic individuals what it's reading with synchronized highlighting that helps build their reading skills.
Wow. And how soon can I get one of these, or anybody? Or is it you're keeping this to yourself for those 1,000 people?
No, this is a product. People can go to knfbreader.com and all the information on how to buy one is on there. This is a shipping commercial product.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about solar energy. I've noticed we've covered very closely an explosion in solar thermal power. For example, the state of California has a mandate to get 20% of their energy from renewable sources, and they've turned towards solar energy in great quantity.
Yeah, well, I just got done with this blue ribbon panel that the National Academy of Engineering organized. Larry Page of Google and Greg Venter and a few others and myself were on this to look at this issue of how we can meet our energy needs, particularly in an environmentally friendly way. And there are a number of ideas, but solar is the most exciting because there's so much sunlight around. We actually have 10,000 times more than we need. If we captured one part in 10,000 of the sunlight that falls in the Earth, we could meet 100% of our energy needs. And the solar panels that we've had to date are not efficient or lightweight or inexpensive enough to do that. But there's a new generation of nano-engineered solar panels coming out, and other new ideas like concave mirrors to focus the sunlight onto a small space, and lots of new technologies, particularly fueled by nano-engineering, that are much more efficient and much less expensive. We believed in the National Academy of Engineering report that we wrote and that was endorsed by NAE, stated that we're less than 5 years away from a tipping point where solar energy will be less expensive per watt than coal and oil and other fossil fuels. Of course, if things keep going the way they did today, that'll be even sooner.
Tomorrow, it could be, with $150
And there's an exponential here. We're actually doubling every 2 years the amount of renewable energy, particularly from solar and wind. Ultimately, solar has more potential because there's more of it around. And we're only seven doublings away from meeting all of our energy needs, which is to say it's about 1% today. But people tend to dismiss these phenomena when they're only 1%, saying, well, 1%'s not a big deal. But they miss the exponential. It's like the Genome Project was dismissed as not working out because halfway through this 15-year project, we'd only finished 1% of the genome. And people said, you know, I told you this wasn't going to work. But seven more doublings, which is what happened over the next 7 years in that project, the project got done on time. Same thing with the Internet. It was only connecting 10,000 scientists, and people dismissed it as insignificant in the 80s, but it was doubling every year, and doubling every year is multiplying by 1,000 in 10 years. So 10 years later, as I predicted in my first book, this was a worldwide phenomenon connecting hundreds of millions of people. So you have to look at these exponential phenomena, and information technology tends to move in that exponential progression. When I was at MIT, we all shared one computer. Your cell phone today is a million times smaller, a million times cheaper, and the computing is 1,000 times more powerful. That's a billion-fold increase in price performance since I was a student at MIT, and we'll make another billion-fold increase in the next 25 years.
1-800-989-8255, talking with Ray Kurzweil, author of The Singularity is Near, When Humans Transcend Biology. Let's talk a bit about humans, because can we expect that life expectancy could be, not run linearly, but maybe doubling?
Well, there's a very important phenomenon that's happening in health and medicine. I just got back this morning from a MIT board meeting, and we've announced a new department of biological engineering, the first new department at MIT in 39 years. Not even computer science got its own department, because we can now engineer our biology as information processes. And that's a brand new concept that was not possible just a few years ago. We collected the genome in 2003. We have RNA interference, a technique now that can turn genes off. We have new forms of gene therapy that can add new genes. We can turn on and off enzymes. We can simulate biological processes on computers. We can design drugs on computers rather than just find substances that seem to work without an understanding of why they work. So health and medicine has become an information technology. And as such, it's subject to what I call the law of accelerating returns, which is this exponential growth, essentially a doubling every year of its capability, price performance, and capacity. So these technologies, which are in an early stage now, will be 1,000 times more powerful in a decade, a million times more powerful in 20 years. We've been adding linearly to human life expectancy. You know, it was 37 years in 1800, and we've been adding 3 months a year in recent decades. But this will go into high gear now that it's not hit or miss anymore, now that it's a information technology. According to my models, 15 years from now, we'll be adding more than a year to your remaining life expectancy. Now, it's not a guarantee. That's a statistical phenomenon. You could get hit by lightning tomorrow, but it will change the metaphor of the sands of time running out.
But if you're adding more than a year every year, you should be living forever then,
Well,
besides getting hit by a car or something like that. Statistically.
Well, Yeah, as time goes on, life expectancy will move on away from you, and we'll be able to overcome more and more issues. But, you know, life expectancy is statistical, so that won't be a guarantee for all of us. But even baby boomers like myself, I just turned 60, do have the opportunity, if they're aggressive, applying today's knowledge, to still be in good shape when we get to that point 15 years from now. And I'm, you know, I'm working on that myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember you talking about your diet and things like that.
Well, I am aggressive and trying to use today's technology to keep myself healthy. And, you know, I still have a biological body, but, you know, if we go out 10, 15, 20 years, we're going to start augmenting our bodies and brains with this, with our technology, and ultimately merge with it. There are people walking around today who have, for example, computers in their brains, like Parkinson's patients, and this pea-sized computer replaces the biological neurons destroyed by that disease. And just recently, the latest generation allows you to actually download new software to the computer in your brain from outside the patient. That's if you're a Parkinson's patient. And ultimately, we'll be able to send these devices in without surgery through the capillaries of the brain, because we're also shrinking technology at an exponential rate of a factor of 100 per 3D volume per decade. So if you look at what we can do today, multiply its capability by a billion in 25 years, which is what we will do through this continued exponential progression, and shrink these technologies by a factor of 100,000, you get some idea of what will be feasible. But even though most computers in the world today are not inside our bodies and brains, they're in our pockets. You can take out a 4-ounce device and access all of human knowledge with a few keystrokes, virtually all human knowledge. I mean, that's an extension of who we are already, and we're getting more closer to these technologies. When I was a student
at MIT. Ray, I'm going to have to hold that thought, because we have to take a break. We'll come back and pick up right there, okay? Talking with Ray Kurzweil about the future, and he has a lot to say and interesting stuff, so stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm Ira Flatow. This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow, talking with Ray Kurzweil, inventor, futurist, author of many books, including The Singularity Is Near, When Humans Transcend Biology, and we're just getting into that, about humans merging with technology. And it just sort of creeps in. Is nanotechnology going to make this all very possible, Ray?
That's another revolution that's in a very early stage. I'd say biotechnology is actually the next revolution that we'll experience, the ability to really reprogram our biology. So drugs will actually be designed on computers, tested on simulators. They'll be turning on and off our genes. And that's a technology that's beginning to become mature. Nanotechnology is still a little far away, but ultimately that will transform, for example, energy by enabling nano-engineered solar panels. It will also revolutionize health. We'll have, if I were to say someday you'll have blood cell-sized devices in your bloodstream going through your body and keeping you healthy at the cellular level from inside, that you'd think, well, that sounds very futuristic. But there's already several dozen experiments of doing that with the first generation of devices in animals. One scientist cured type 1 diabetes in rats with a blood cell-sized device. It's nano-engineered, has 7-nanometer pores that let out insulin in a controlled fashion. At MIT, they have a blood cell-sized device that can detect cancer cells based on the antigens on their surface and destroy them. And there are a variety of experiments like this in animals, and these will be going into human trials in the years ahead. But I'd say the real nanotechnology revolution is a little bit far away. But if you go out to the 2020s, we will have desktop-sized devices that can fabricate three-dimensional products that will meet your material needs. There are already early harbingers of this. But just as I can email you today a book or a movie or a sound recording, whereas those used to be physical products, now they're just email attachments, in the future I'll be able to email you a blouse or a physical device or food, and you'll be able to just send that email attachment to your
desktop nano replicator, and it will create a three-dimensional object.
Do you think we'll be able to transport people like they do in Star Trek?
Well, that's a ways away. That's not 2020s, but if you got to 2040s or 2050s, we will be mostly non-biological because we're going to be merging with our technology. The non-biological portion of our intelligence is going to grow exponentially. The biological portion is fixed. If you go out to far enough, then we will be mostly non-biological. And we do know that non-biological files we can easily replicate. We do that every day with our computers. We don't have those quick downloading ports on our biological neurons. That's one thing that biological evolution left out. So as we become more non-biological, we will be able to do things like back up our mind file.
Let me go to Mark in San Francisco. Hi, welcome to Science Friday.
Hi, thank you. I wonder if Mr. Kurzweil studies any of the dangers of future science as well as the positive, because I'd love to be immortal, but I also worry, you know, if I'm non-biological, am I going to respond to things the same way because I won't have, you know, hormones and such, or are there going to be biological warfare that's going to be very dangerous? Do you study any of the downsides?
Well, very much so, and it's a broad topic. I don't think augmenting ourselves with non-biological technology, you know, necessarily makes us less emotional. In fact, it is going to be capturing our emotional intelligence, which will be the heart of the artificial intelligence project. But yes, there are downsides to technology. There have been ever since we had technology, like fire and stone tools. And the specter that exists today is applying biotechnology to be destructive. So you could have a bioterrorist using the same tools that we hope to overcome cancer and heart disease, could use that to reprogram a biological virus to be more deadly, more communicable, or more stealthy. Mm-hmm. And the tools and knowledge to do that are actually more widespread than the tools and knowledge to, for example, build an atomic bomb, yet could actually be more destructive. And I've written extensively about that. Chapter 8 of my latest book, Singularities Near, is called The Deeply Intertwined Promise of GNR, which is genetics, nanotechnology, and robotics. And I've worked with the Army on this issue of biological viruses, setting up a rapid response system. And the good news is we actually have the scientific knowledge to combat that. We can now sequence a virus in a day or two. It took us 5 years to sequence HIV. We can create an RNA interference medication quickly. We can gear up manufacturing. We can test it using new protocols in an emergency. And so I'm on the Army Science Advisory Board, and the Army is responsible for this area. And yes, we do need to invest in rapid response systems, just like we have a rapid response system for software viruses. But these technologies certainly can be abused, and the high-level message is we need to invest in the defenses, have ethical standards for responsible practitioners, and I have been very involved in that issue.
I have a couple of questions here. I'll take this one from Manfer in Second Life and equal questions in on the phone. And they want to know, where have you gone wrong? And your any major erroneous projections or theories that you had that have not passed, come to pass, or not going to happen?
Well, I've just been reviewing some of that in the Age of Intelligent Machines and Age of Spiritual Machines. I mean, some things are a few years off, but I've really tried to avoid the temptation to make projections about specific companies or what, you know, will the next wireless standard be, G3, G4, et cetera, and tried to really base them on what I, you know, believe are pretty inexorable trends in information technology. And in broad strokes, so the descriptions I've made of future periods, for example, the book I wrote in the 1980s, The Age of Intelligent Machines, finished in 87, provides a pretty accurate roadmap to the 90s and this decade that we're now finishing. Age of Spiritual Machines I wrote 10 years ago.
But have you been wrong about certain things?
I can't cite, you know, a major incorrect prediction. There's some things that are off by a few years. Speech recognition, I believe, is going to become ubiquitous when we get more powerful mobile phones that have enough processing power to run high-quality speaker-independent large vocabulary speech recognition, and that's coming early in this decade. I said that that would be ubiquitous by around 2009, 2010. I think it looks like we'll have powerful enough computers, and people will want to do that, but it'll probably be 2011 or 2012. But it's not far off.
Mm-hmm. Do you see any limitations at all? Do you see us, do you see us using up the Earth in the future?
I mean, there are limitations. I talk about, there's only so much computation you can squeeze out of matter and energy. But it turns out to be not very limiting. I mean, ultimately, when we capture the software of human intelligence by reverse engineering our brains and then apply that to computing at the molecular level, we can multiply our intelligence by the end of this century.
But will that make us smart enough not to use up the Earth and have to move off of it?
I don't think we're going to use up the Earth. We actually have lots of resources here, once we develop these methods we've been talking about. I mean, as I mentioned, we have 10,000 times more sunlight than we need. We need the nanotechnology-based solar collectors that can do that efficiently. We have lots of water. Dean Kamen has an exciting technology that can, once it's perfected, really convert that in, very efficiently, very inexpensively. We have lots of material resources once we can reorganize the molecules using nanotechnology. We'll be able to support really any conceivable size biological population, certainly through the rest of this century. I don't see using up resources as a problem if you look at the exponential progression of these technologies we've been talking about.
Mm-hmm. Well, Ray, I want to thank you for taking time to be with us today. And good luck to you.
Yeah, my pleasure, Ira.
And good luck on your book. Ray Kurzweil, inventor, futurist, and author of The Singularity Is Near, When Humans Transcend Biology. He's also the CEO of Kurzweil Technologies.